Hello and welcome to Hospice News Elevate podcast. My name is Jim Parker. I'm editor of Hospice News. And with me today is Jim Wieland, CEO of Tuesday Health, and Dr. Mihir Kamdar, head of clinical delivery for Tuesday Health. And today we'll be talking about building a palliative care program from the ground up. Gentlemen, I appreciate both of you being here. Thank you. So I wanted to start by asking if you could introduce our audience to Tuesday Health.
Sure. Thanks, Jim. And this is Jim Wheel, and I'll take that. So Tuesday Health, along with some incredible like foundational partners, which we'll announce shortly, is really an organization that is focused on working with fiduciaries to help them identify those members that have both a serious illness and a high symptom burden, really the folks that in the absence of palliative or supportive care are likely to utilize what are unnecessary or otherwise avoidable acute medical services. And we do this both through identifying that population and then using a multi-pronged approach to engaging those folks. I mean, here we'll talk a little bit about the clinical model, but from an assessment perspective and a care plan perspective, really applying the evidence that the industry has done such a great job in applying and then using technology to ensure that those care plans are calibrated to the ever-evolving needs of not only the member, but also the caregiver and meeting them where they're at so that, again, we can reduce those avoidable acute services, which not only drive unnecessary spend, but really, and more importantly, create a less than ideal experience for the member and their caregiver and at the right time. And if the serious illness does progress, really thinking about the appropriate and timely transition to hospice.
Excellent. And can you tell me about your palliative care program and how that got started?
Sure, Jim. So our company, Tuesday Health, was founded in July of 2023, so we're early, but we're excited that we're launching our palliative care program in June of this year. You know, and as Jim mentioned, our goal really is to bridge that important and really vulnerable gap that we see, you know, patients and caregivers struggle with as they navigate the challenge of serious illness. And what we're really excited about is to really deliver this new model of comprehensive supportive care.
Terrific. And could you describe, you know, of course, there's a lot of variation out there when it comes to palliative care and what that means and what it looks like. Could you describe your particular business model and the care model for your palliative care program that's upcoming?
Sure. I mean, I'll take it from the business perspective and then let me hear talk about the clinical model. But from a business model perspective, you know, we really want to be aligned with our partners. And in doing so, you know, doing what's right for the member and the caregiver to increase that quality of life. And we believe, and I think the evidence would demonstrate that increasing the quality of life, you're also reducing overall cost. So we understand that from a business model perspective, when we think about the fiduciaries that are in this space, we need to be flexible from a partnership perspective. But ultimately, you know, putting our money where our mouth is and really believing in what we believe to be true is true and demonstrating that in our relationships with the fiduciaries. Mihir, you want to cover the care model?
Sure, yeah. So in terms of our care model, we utilize a hybrid model of in-person in-home care combined with virtual supportive care. And I think one of the key elements for us is how we leverage technology at key points throughout the care continuum. From the moment of patient identification to how we think about continuous monitoring to how we think about telepalliative care delivery, you know, really trying to create access to evidence-based supportive and palliative care. And, you know, more specifically, part of our model is working with high-quality network partners to provide the in-home care. But we augment that delivery through evidence-based assessments and care plans, as you mentioned, really bringing the leading edge research from our team, from our clinical advisory board to the bedside, as well as how we think about dynamic acuity tiering to make sure that we're matching the right clinical resource to the right patient and caregiver need at the right time. And also by providing a virtual clinical backend for continuous monitoring for acute issues at 3 a.m. so we can address it and really be able to help folks stay in the home. And And ultimately, we think this unique model really provides a comprehensive safety net to meet the complex needs of our patients and their loved ones, navigating serious illness.
Excellent. And do you have a sense of the scale, what the scale of the program will be at the outset?
Yeah. So, Jim, we're early. So we are in the process of implementing our first demonstration, which we'll publicly announce, but it's in implementation right now. It'll go live in the second quarter, and the second and third demonstrations are likely early and mid third quarter. So from that perspective, the Tuesday model is fairly new, and we're in the process of implementing those initial demonstrations. But the assets that we're pulling together and the experience that we get from our partner organizations is strong, and it goes back several years, and really touches on the proof points of palliative care, which we hope to bring at scale.
So that makes sense. Thank you. And how do you anticipate securing payment for your palliative care services?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. I know not just for Tuesday, but from an industry perspective. And, Jim, my longstanding belief in being in healthcare for 20 plus years is that if you can deliver value on behalf of the member and caregiver, and in doing so, you reduce total overall cost of care, there's an avenue for unlocking that value that you're creating. So we know that we have to be flexible, not only from a clinical model perspective, when we think about the different payers in this space, whether it's ACOs or health plans, or PACE organizations, or some of the specialty risk organizations. But we also have to be flexible from a financial perspective. What I do believe is true is that if you unlock value and you can quantify that, there's an opportunity to share that. And as we think about kind of what that looks like structurally, that can take the form of anything from an admin model to a fee-for-service model. Ultimately, we want to get into the position where we're putting our money where our mouth is. We want to move towards risk. And I think that's when all of the parties are aligned, because we can share some of that upside with the palliative care providers and certainly with the fiduciaries or the payers on the front end.
Excellent. Yeah, that seems like, as you've noted, there's kind of a patchwork of palliative care reimbursement systems out there. And it's like you're positioning yourselves to participate in a number of them. What would you say are the most important factors that a provider or entrepreneur should keep in mind when setting up a new palliative care business?
I think that's a great question, Jim. And I think the key here really is to have eyes wide open that this landscape is continuously evolving. And so there's an inherent need to really be nimble and flexible. And as you know, Jim, and I've written as such, there's a lot of challenges in navigating the serious illness landscape, from staffing challenges to shifting reimbursement models to how do we think about addressing access to supportive and palliative care in rural and urban areas, frankly, and how do we think about addressing inequities to access? And I think what's clear is that these gaping needs are right in front of us at the present time, and they're only going to increase with time. But I think that also, therein lies really the opportunity, which is what we're trying to address at Tuesday Health, to really create a model that can drive impact.
Excellent. And, as we've, of course, palliative care doesn't occur in a vacuum. You're going to need referral partners. There's the payer relationships that we talked about a moment ago. How do you go about at the outset securing those, whether it's payer contracts or referral partner relationships?
Yeah. And Jim, I've given this statement 100 times since I started. I've been in this space for a long, long time, and in the healthcare space and the payer space. And I can tell you from from my perspective and those 20 years of talking with different purchasing organizations, I've never seen the interest in anything I've brought forward that I've seen in the palliative care space. So that's incredibly encouraging. I think it's important to understand, as you have those discussions with the various referral partners, whether it's the traditional Medicare Advantage payers or payers more generally, or some of the subspecialty groups, you have to understand the mechanics and the fiduciary workflow. We know, and it's really encouraging to hear that these folks from top to bottom know that this is the right thing to do by the member and their caregiver. So that encouragement and being creative to understand kind of, again, where we unlock the value, we can capture some of that value. And then I would say the final piece is, you know, the payer space or the payer ecosystem is going through tremendous change, and that's a continuous process. In doing so, there's limited resources to execute on different initiatives. So ensuring that you have the support of the most senior level of these organizations, as well as the folks that are going to execute, and keeping it a priority on their list is extremely important, because there are a lot of competing priorities.
And I should ask, we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, just in conversation, but of course, CMS announced that the VBID model would end at the end of this year. I wondered, you know, do you anticipate that affecting your palliative care business at all? Did you have plans related to VBID, or is it kind of negligible for your particular program?
Yeah, I would say in the immediate future, Jim, it's negligible. And the reason I say that, we've had a number of discussions with the payers that participated in VBID, as well as the provider side, and understood the frustrations and the inability to scale the model that was put out. That said, I think it's laudable that the opportunity or the need for improving that end of life journey is something that needs to be addressed. So CMMI, you know, should get a lot of credit for trying, and I suspect at some point that we'll see another try at this. We still have the ACO Reaches. We've got PACE programs. So we've got other folks that are looking at this at a continuum. But from Tuesday Health's perspectives, our immediate focus is to really spotlight the quality of care improvement and the value that the palliative care space unlocks.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of what I anticipated, but I thought the question was worth asking. Thank you for taking it. You know, we talked about the payer relationships, the referral relationships. What are some of the biggest challenges, the risks, the pitfalls that go along with starting a palliative care program, and how do you navigate those?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I'll take a swing at some of the things that I've recognized and ask me here to jump in. But I think the first thing, Jim, that we see that kind of is, I think, as an industry, we think it's a check the box, but we have to define what palliative care is and what it isn't. I think folks understand generally kind of where it sits in a continuum of care, but don't really define, you know, the scope of services and kind of how it should be applied. The second is really recognizing the need and quantifying the impact. And there's great research out there that generally shows the impact of palliative care, but what does that look like for a prospective payer or somebody who could be a client? I would say the third challenge that I look at is a startup. You're asking folks who are in business to take a risk. In our case, we're taking, you know, several assets, bringing them together, and we're trying to prove that 1 + 1 + 1 = 5. And we need folks that are willing to take a risk with us that we can demonstrate to be true what we believe to be true. And then finally, I mentioned earlier about the priorities of the health plan. One of the challenges always is in this space, there's competing priorities. There's never enough resources. So ensuring that, you know, the program that you're bringing forward falls on that list of 3 to 5 priorities that a health plan can execute in a given year. And I'll be here if you have additional thoughts.
Yeah, I think from a clinical perspective, I'd say there's several challenges that I'd add. And I think still, unfortunately, one of the key challenges is that there's still a lot of misconceptions and stigma about palliative and supportive care for patients and caregivers. But you know, frankly, with providers, you know, not really understanding what it is, the benefits of early identification and early integration of palliative and supportive care. And I think as a startup, you know, we need to be able to navigate those challenges and address those misconceptions, you know, thoughtfully, skillfully, but also quickly, you know, because we are a startup. I think there's also one of the other challenges is the not recognizing the need for early integrated palliative care, as I mentioned, really getting involved, not just at the very end, but upstream, when we can really be able to develop relationships with the patient, with their caregivers, with their other treating providers, to really be able to, you know, improve their quality of care and experience throughout their serious illness care journey. And that challenge exists not just from systems, from a population health level, but also for providers. You know, how do we really help those providers recognize the benefit for their patients who they care very much about, but also, you know, for their day-to-day practice, how can we make their lives easier? And so how can we help them see our partnership that way? I'd say engagement is another challenge that I think a lot of folks in this space have struggled with. And not only for the patient and caregiver, but also how do you, as I was just saying, really build that provider partnership so the care feels really integrated. And that's, you know, this is all really a major focus for us at Tuesday Health. And then, you know, I think another central challenge is the staffing issues that we see, you know, nationally. And, you know, and how do we make sure that we can provide the type of care that we know is needed, given the complexities of what our patients and caregivers are experiencing.
And I imagine that one thing that factors into that quite a bit is, you know, of course, there's the staffing headwinds in the space. How did you go about staffing your program amid these shortages?
That's another great question, Jim. And I think one fundamental key is how we've designed the model, and which we'll talk about, but also really helping our clinicians within that model be empowered to truly practice at the top of license. And as an example, I think our use of technology really helps with that. You know, as we think about, historically, I'd say there's sometimes a misconception, and I've seen it in our field, that technology sometimes feels like antithetical to the really the human element of palliative supportive care. And the way that we see it is really, how do we leverage technology to bring that limited resource, that human element, you know, particularly amongst a workforce shortage, to the patient at the right time and by the right clinician. And so we use technology to help us really guide our dynamic acuity tiers, which helps us determine the dose and frequency of the clinician touches, whether it's in person or virtual. You know, how do we think about continuous monitoring to really be able to identify issues and get the right clinician involved at the right time to really optimally match resource to need? And I think, you know, my experience is when clinicians truly feel like they are unlocked and practicing at the top of their license, and improving care and impacting care, it's incredibly rewarding. And so, you know, those are key elements of what we've tried to bring in the very fabric, I'd say, of Tuesday Health. I think as it relates to our model, another way that we work with some of the staffing challenges is because we use a hybrid model of virtual care and telemedicine, which helps extend our staffing reach. And then I think the last thing I'd say, Jim, just in terms of, you know, once you've identified folks, you can bring them on your team, then retention is key, right? And so for us, that's really about having a mission that aims to have significant impact for patients and caregivers. And you know, I think in my almost 20 years of working in palliative care, there's a clear recognition in my mind that people who choose to work in this field are really mission oriented. You know, this work is not for the faint of heart. And so the more we can engage everyone at every level of the organization in helping us to build something of impact, the more we really create a culture of meaning. And, you know, my experience, this can be a significant antidote to burnout and help us really keep great clinicians who are then going to provide great care at the bedside.
Just to close, I wanted to ask each of you, what is the most important advice you would give to someone who is about to launch a palliative care program?
Yeah, I'll start, and me here with his 20 plus years of experience will probably give a better answer, but I'll start from my perspective. A couple of things I would say. One is do it for the right reason and be committed. And what I mean by the right reason is this is such a unique space in healthcare, wildly underserved, but really doing it for the right reasons. Be very mission driven on really serving the most vulnerable population amongst us, the folks that are going through really the hardest time and most vulnerable times in their lives, and doing the right thing. from a commitment perspective, it's not just a business commitment, it's a financial commitment. There is nothing about palliative care that's a get rich quick. It's a long journey. And starting with, you got to prove your value proposition before you can unlock margins. So you got to really execute on your mission, and the margin will follow. I don't want to hear if you have additional thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with everything you said. And I think for me, it's pretty simple that we have to keep patients and family, you know, at the center, both at the onset and then throughout the course of a palliative care program, because, you know, as we've discussed, you know, there are significant winds of change. We know the landscape is shifting. And so, you know, there's a worry that if you don't keep the patient front and center, that element can get lost. And truly that has to remain the North Star. And so no matter what, we need to make sure that we're delivering for our patients and their loved ones, because, you know, as you said, Jim, this is such a vulnerable population in need. And so keeping that as our North Star, I think is so critical.
Excellent. Yeah, that makes a tremendous amount of sense in today's environment. Thank you both very much for your time and insights. This podcast has been brought to you by the WTWH Media Publications, Hospice News and Palliative Care News. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening in, and I hope you all take good care.